Welcome to the Better Doctor Project podcast, where we link healthcare providers of all specialties to help us grow and learn from each other to be that much better for our patients. We sit down and talk about the fun things, the big and bright ideas, and we go over tons of practice tips and occasionally cover some pretty scandalous topics. Join us every episode to keep growing to become the best provider you can be. Let's get started. Today's episode is sponsored by The Smart Chiropractor and their new book, The Payday Practice. So I'm sure you guys have heard of Seth Godin, Gary Vaynerchuk, and Tim Ferriss. How do you think they would build the ultimate healthcare practice? The answer is in this book, The Payday Practice. Doctors Jeff and Jason will show you how to cover your monthly expenses in one day, every single month, guaranteed. Whether you want to grow financially to support your physical practice or create the digital healthcare practice of the future, this book is your blueprint for building it, launching it, and growing it. As someone who is currently in the process of building my own private practice, I knew I had to share this with you guys. Get your free copy today at www.thepaydaypractice.com. Their step-by-step guide to financial freedom will show you how to 1. Set your dream, visions, and goals using their financial freedom formula, 2. Build a health tribe of people who are engaged and ready to go all in with your business, 3. Create an irresistible membership offer for your clients and patients, and 4. Launch and sell out your membership in the next 30 days. The Payday Practice will show you the exact step-by-step process that you can use to generate monthly recurring revenue in your practice. Get your free copy today at www.thepaydaypractice.com. I also recommend checking them out at The Smart Chiropractor on Facebook and also Instagram at The Smart Chiro for more amazing knowledge to take your practice to the next level. Our guest for today's episode is David Skolnick, a doctor of physical therapy, educator, and coach. He is the founder and owner of Stronger in Motion and master instructor with the Pain-Free Performance Specialist Certification. Over the last 7+ years, David has worked with hundreds of patients and clients, helping them achieve goals ranging from returning home after a major surgery, stepping on the powerlifting platform for the first time, addressing chronic back pain, or preparing their body and mind for a 200+ mile bike ride. He's kind of done it all. Since he first heard the phrase, exercise is medicine, this concept has been his North Star, guiding his career and his passion for improving how healthcare and fitness services are delivered and experienced. This episode covers the magic of what strength training can do for modern medicine, how all specialties can contribute to this recent change in healthcare, and how we can empower our patients instead of tearing them down based on things that they currently can or cannot do. So listen up, this is a good one. Hello and welcome you guys to another episode of Better Doctor Project. I'm really excited today. We have a physical therapist on. His name is David Skolnick and he's just a wealth of information, and he's not even just a PT, you guys. I can't even list all of the things that he's involved with. I just find his brain so empowering and so interesting. And so David, just thanks so much for joining us today.
You are very welcome. I probably do too many things.
I love it because, you know, possibilities are endless in today's world and we have to kind of make our mark on society somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Go ahead and give us a background about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is David. I am a physical therapist. I've been practicing since 2015. So I think that puts me at like about 7.5 years out of school at this point. I am also a strength coach and personal trainer. I am an educator. I work with a company called Pain-Free Performance, where I get to travel around mostly the Southwest part of the country. And I host 16-hour continuing education courses for allied health and fitness professionals. So lots of personal trainers, physical therapists, chiropractors. We're sort of branching into running specialized courses just for healthcare providers and rehab professionals, which is really awesome. I have a podcast, which is sort of on the shelf at this point based on all these other things I'm doing, but it's called the Essential Strength Podcast. What else do you want to know? I own a business called Stronger in Motion. My wife, her name is Rebecca. She's also a physical therapist and a nutrition coach. So yeah, I wear lots of hats and do lots of things, and I'm usually too busy for my own good.
I love that. I mean, it's just amazing to list off all of those things and see how they all kind of intertwine to accomplish the greater goal, right?
Yes.
I love it.
Greater goal being promoting the health benefits of exercise. right? Yeah. Exercise as medicine. And for me in particular, like my North Star is strength.
Well, and this is the biggest reason I wanted to bring you on, because healthcare is kind of in a shift right now where we're finally realizing some of the ridiculous things we recommended to patients 10, 15 plus years ago. And we're completely doing a shift when it comes to musculoskeletal health and strength training and overall fitness and functional health. And so the biggest thing I wanted to talk to you about today was comparing that older mindset to today's world. What are the benefits? What can we see coming through the future? Can you just really briefly give us a general description of what we used to think in terms of this form of healthcare compared to what we think of it now?
Yeah. So I think if we're looking particularly at the idea of strength training or resistance training, that used to be sort of reserved for the niche communities of like bodybuilding, powerlifting, kind of ego-driven and kind of like a privilege versus a necessity to be strong. And, you know, just a lot of language like deadlifting is bad, squats are bad for your knees, you know, lifting weights is generally just bad for your joints, but also don't run because that's bad for your joints. So probably best to, I don't know, swim, you know, but you could drown, I suppose, which is also not very healthy. And I think that unfortunately, so there's that part of it. There's also, I think, generationally outside of the realm of healthcare, just like women and strength were at complete odds with one another, right? Like women were not supposed to be muscular. They were not supposed to be strong. I mean, my wife 3 weeks ago in a gym had someone tell her that, like, try and correct her form on a deadlift and tell her that if she didn't keep her spine completely vertical, she was going to hurt her back. You know, she's been deadlifting and had an older gentleman come up and be like, you know, that's going to make you build muscle, right? As if that's a bad thing.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and she's great. She'll just be like, yep, that's the point. And just like put her headphones back in and then put more weight on and deadlift and like try and make eye contact.
Yeah. Well, and I love that the shift is happening, especially for women. Obviously, as a female myself, this is a topic of concern for me. And I personally wasn't exposed to strength training until later in life. I guess I could have dabbled in high school because it was starting to kind of be introduced at the time, but it was definitely something for the privileged. You know, like the people in my high school that were really getting into it had D1 college athlete parents. They had a gym at their house. You know, like they had like this different lifestyle than what I had. My parents didn't exercise. I was lucky if, you know, we went for a walk outside.
Yeah. And if your mom didn't train, like you weren't going to train.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, until recently. I mean, Title IX isn't even that old, right? Like we are just getting into a point where like women's sports is getting appropriate recognition. And so the idea of then like women in the weight room is still, it's so new. So that's part of it. But what I think is starting to happen now, luckily, is, and I guess this is good or bad, it depends on if you think that medicalization of things is good or not. But like now we have a diagnosis for sarcopenia, right? Like the pathological loss of muscle that can pair often with osteopenia or osteoporosis, which is the pathological loss of bone. And so we're starting to get, you know, reputable medical professionals like doctors who, again, like the older generation, I'm sure you've had this happen as a chiropractor. I've had this happen as a PT. It's like, well, let me talk to my doctor about that. You're like, your doctor doesn't know jack shit about exercise. So
and it's not their fault. It's just not a part of their training.
That's not a part of their scope.
Right.
But if your doctor says, you know, I want you to get a DEXA scan and, you know, there's a concerning amount of loss of muscle tissue for someone your age and gender, or like a ratio of fat mass to fat free mass is putting you at increased risk of X, Y, and Z diseases or lifestyle diseases. It's like, maybe that is how we get strength training to be like prescribed. And I do think that at least early on is going to help. People still have to do it. You know, plenty of people don't even take the medication. That's like one pill a day. So the idea of an hour of exercise 4 days a week is going to be, it's a big hurdle.
Yeah.
But I do think we're definitely starting to recognize, you know, what does muscle, what role does muscle play in independence as we age? What role does it play in reducing risk of fracture? Mm-hmm. What role does it have on metabolic health, which is humongous, right? Huge. Like it is a giant part of our hormonal health is having the sort of like adequate amount or surplus of muscle. And so, yeah, I think there's a brighter future for strength training or resistance exercise sort of being paired up with the traditional 150 minutes of just general physical activity per week, which could just be walking. But yeah, I think we're starting to recognize it as, and I don't know whether that's like sort of like gym culture driving medicine to look into this more because patients are asking, but yeah. Whatever it is, like, however we get more people stronger is fine by me.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned metabolic health because I think we forget the magnitude of what this can do for healthcare as a system. I mean, even globally, but when you look at the US in general, what it could do for some of the chronic illness we're dealing with and the billions of dollars we're spending on these chronic illnesses that could potentially be preventable or in some cases reversible with functional health and strength training. I mean, it's just, it blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just talking to a patient about this yesterday and we were talking about it through the lens of like reimbursement for physical therapy and chiropractic and rehabilitative medicine, just going in the absolute toilet.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to see 4 people per hour. And like our profession is getting so watered down and like the reputation of rehab professionals is plummeting and the burnout rate is skyrocketing because we get paid $50 an hour for a patient that we bill $300 to insurance for. Like, yeah, you're only worth $50. It's like, well, I guess we got to see 4 people an hour to keep the lights on. But that's just one example of a million examples. And there's like data, right? Evidence and high level research on when people come see a rehab professional first for something like back pain, their cost to the system, lifetime cost, is so much lower. It's so much lower. Like their rate of getting surgery goes down. Surgeries are not cheap.
And we're talking their thousands rate of recurrence, dollars.
Thousands, tens of, I mean, lifetime. Mm-hmm. If you have your first occurrence of back pain at 25 and a surgery at 27 and you live to be 90, like what is that going to cost versus if you didn't have that surgery? So it's like anything, like there's an upfront cost, but it's just, it's wild to me that insurance companies who are in the business of making money don't value the providers that can ultimately save them money over the course of decades.
It's that instant gratification problem that we suffer from as a species, because that requires critical thinking, looking at numbers long-term, doing long-term studies. And that's the crux of it. You know, they want something right now and it's just really hard, but I wanted to share with you my dream naive world of what I would love to see happen. I love the idea of the World Health Organization or whoever needs to get involved. If we could provide every single person in the United States with whatever insurance plan they have, if we could provide them with a somehow complimentary, like literally one visit annually, where you have a full 60-minute appointment with whatever specialist is going to be able to give you a full assessment, find weakness, find compensation, find biomechanical dysfunction, find functional behaviors you're no longer able to do, like literally just find anything, whether it's symptom-based or not, teach them how to correct it, whether that takes X number of visits or not, or literally just patient education. I think that alone would transform this and be like a really easy catalyst to get the ball started. Because for a lot of patients, it's not really that they don't want to learn. It's just not in the forefront because it doesn't matter right now. You know, they go to the doctor when, you know, they have their torn rotator cuff is so bad that now it's time to get surgery, you know, but what if we could have found that range of motion deficit or that weakness before the rotator cuff even tore, you know, like one example of many, you know, what if we could have found out that you had such terrible lumbar range of motion before you threw your back out 8 months later? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, you know, skeptics and theories that can get involved, but it would make sense to me that like in the same way we have other forms of preventive healthcare now, that we could do the same thing with the musculoskeletal system and therefore save our country literally billions of dollars a year.
Oh yeah. I mean, so in my mind, one model for that would be to make it more like how we treat the dentist.
Yes, exactly.
Like a biannual, twice a year screen.
100%. Right?
Where we give you like a home exercise program to address mobility and strength deficits. Obviously, it's just like brushing your teeth. You have to do it. Like, mm-hmm. I can't brush your teeth for you, but I can tell you why it's important, right? I can give you the floss. You still got to take it out and put it between your teeth. But, right, like people don't go to the dentist only to get a tooth pulled after like 6 months of eating less and less of their favorite foods, right? They go because it's like, oh yeah, I go to the dentist every 6 months because I go to the dentist every 6 months. And I get my teeth cleaned and I find out which areas might be at risk. But I think that would be a fantastic way to approach. And it doesn't mean that you wouldn't then say as a PT or a chiropractor or whoever else, like, I really think based on what we're finding today, I need to see you for 6 weeks. But at least it would get them in the door to be like, oh yeah, this shoulder thing has been bothering me. Mm-hmm. You know, my knee, yeah, it started about 2 months ago. Like, I'm glad that I had this on the calendar, mm-hmm. right?
I think that would save so much. So one of the things I love about you is that you're blunt. You're not afraid to tell it like it is. And so I want to ask you a question that some of our listeners might not want to hear. I want to look at widespread healthcare, whether you are a general practitioner, a nurse, an ER medical doctor, a surgeon, a chiropractor, whatever you are. Why are there still providers in certain specialties that just don't get it? Why do they not know the benefits of strength training and functional health? What are we missing?
It's just not part of the curriculum. Hmm. I think as simple as that.
Yeah. Like
even physical therapists, right? We are movement experts, right? That is maybe the one thing that we can hang our hats on the most. But most programs are not going to give you any real structured learning on how to like periodize a strength training program for a patient. Or even like, what's the difference between trying to stimulate muscle hypertrophy versus muscle endurance versus strength? And so if we're not getting it as PTs and you're not getting it in chiropractic school, like surgeons certainly aren't getting it. GPs absolutely are not getting it. It's not on the test, right? There's nothing on the physical therapy board exam about exercise load percentages for building muscle, right? It's ultrasound parameters. How do you appropriately like drape a patient in a hospital? How do you help them transfer? All important stuff. Like, what are the cardiac red flags that mean you need to get this person out of your office and into the hospital, which we need to know, mm-hmm. right? But I think what we learn is how to do no harm. And then what we don't necessarily learn is like how to help.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty simple there.
Which now, I think a lot of PTs feel as soon as they get out of school. You're yes. like, okay, I cleared you. Like, I don't think your atlas is fractured and your head's going to fall off. But, yeah, you have headaches and I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. And it requires so much deep diving as a provider with such a limited time. I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the hardest part is that the two areas we need to intersect is, you know, core curriculum and programs and the insurance side of things, which are two very difficult areas to change. Like, there's really no easy solution to this. It's going to require politics. It's going to require dollars. It's going to require large organizations caring. Yeah. We're kind of in a tough spot here.
And unfortunately, it's like healthcare is a business.
Yeah.
And so like, what is more important, unfortunately, like mm-hmm. the patient getting better or the patient continuing to like pay for your services? And I remember I think it's Andrew Weeding, Wheat Belly diet. It's like he was a cardiologist who basically stopped practicing traditional medicine and just does diet based interventions. He's very gluten free. It's his mm-hmm. biggest thing to improve health, cardiac health markers. But he said the straw, I remember this on another podcast he was a guest on, and he said the straw that broke his back for this was being kind of early in his practice, like cardiac surgery, and going into like the sort of end of year meeting, department meeting, and the head of the department saying, you know, we did X number of triple bypasses this year. Like next year, I want to do 1.3 times that many triple bypasses. And you're like, that's the metric we're looking at. Like, oh, we want more people needing heart surgery.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't that be, we want 50% less of those because we're intervening with our patients earlier, but it's mm-hmm. like surgery. I mean, surgery pays the bills for yeah. sure. Surgery pays the bills. So that's the other side of it is, I think, and that might be not a uniquely American problem, but a pretty profoundly American problem mm-hmm. with like every other ad being for a new diabetes medicine. And it's like, can we just get an ad for fucking vegetables, please? Like, can we get 30 seconds of like just a person walking and be like, try this new thing. It's called walking.
It's crazy. Like give it a shot. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah.
We just discovered this. Moving your bones.
It makes a huge difference. But again, it's the ability to think long-term. That's just really, really hard. And money is going to be huge.
And yeah. To think maybe I'll lose money.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like, never going to be a shortage of sick people. Like that's guaranteed. Never.
Yeah. Right?
The pie, the giant pie full of sick people is only going to keep getting bigger. And like, we really don't need to be competing over them.
So we obviously know that this mindset shift is going to help people automatically with musculoskeletal health, metabolic health, all these other things. One thing we haven't quite touched on yet, though, is that it actually helps people from a mental health perspective, too. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to talk a little bit about how this mindset changes you as a provider from constantly talking about what a patient cannot do and helping them realize, whoa, look at all of these things your body can do for you. So let's talk about that shift. I mean, what do you see with your patients when that finally changes in their brains?
So it's huge. And I thought about this because, you know, this was sort of, we chatted about this in the lead up to our recording this conversation, was this idea of empowering patients and clients versus like disempowering them. And I would say that would be maybe my biggest hesitation with the idea of having patients go see a provider once a year is like, what if that provider tells them they're broken and then they don't see them again for a year? Because all they did was tell them what was wrong with them and what they shouldn't do. And I think that's a big thing is mm-hmm. across the board, healthcare providers, even fitness professionals, like we do these screenings, which again, like we're taught to look for the red flags and the orange flags and try and keep people safe. But sometimes safe in the short term is like really, really detrimental in the long term when you've got someone who's like, oh yeah, my doctor told me 10 years ago not to lift anything over 10 pounds. And you're like, you are weak. Mm-hmm. And that is your number one problem. So I think people go to the doctor when something is wrong. Like they already know, right? They're already self-limiting because of pain or lack of mobility or deconditioning. Right? That's the same reason why people go to seek out a personal trainer. They don't like the way they look in a mirror. They have been told they need to lose weight, maybe by a provider, maybe by their spouse, whatever. They have pain. They can't lift their grandkids. Like people, we're very aware of what's wrong with us. I think it's like we have two negative thoughts for every one positive, if not three. And that's just like psychological fact, which is us kind of, again, trying to keep ourselves safe evolutionarily. Yeah. But I mean, I just have, it's like countless examples. Like even yesterday having a patient talk about, they went to an ortho, got an image of their shoulder and was like, yeah, you don't really qualify for surgery. There's nothing we can do. This is probably going to get worse. You could try PT if you want. I don't think it's going to work. But that's kind of the best I can do for you. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Or like, I had a client within the last year. He was 21 when I worked with him. When he was 17, he was diagnosed with lumbar scoliosis. And his doctor told him, no weightlifting, no running, no organized sports. He could walk and swim for exercise for the rest of his life. And he was 17. Right? So that is not only going to be what, which he ignored, thank God, and competes in powerlifting. So not only is that going to be really physically detrimental, but it's like mentally, what does that do to you? Oh, you're like, gosh. I'm broken, unfixable. And this is my destiny at this point. Right. And I saw the specialist who confirmed that this is basically a hopeless case. And at some point I'll just need surgery to fix me. Right. And so that's terrible. And those are the people where, and they don't, people don't have to be told that by a doctor either. You've probably heard this as well. Like a patient comes in. I had a patient recently, teacher, like she had to put her classroom back together after they cleaned it right over the summer. So you got to move the desks. You got to move the tables. You got to move the bookshelves and all that kind of stuff. And her back hurt after that. And what she said to me was, I should have known better. I won't move tables again. Like, no. You need to get stronger. So the next time you have to move those tables, which will be next fall, it will be no big deal. Right. Exactly. Don't do less. Right. Like, it's not the load that hurts you. It's the load you're not prepared for. Yeah. And so showing people that via strength training, via conditioning, cardiovascular exercise, right? If you're winded when you get to the top of the stairs, that doesn't mean you just close off the second floor of your house. It means like you probably need to get in some sort of shape so you can go up the stairs and then not need to sit down for 5 minutes. But people are so afraid of pain that it's like when anything causes pain, especially back pain, like I'm never going to do that again. Cause that's, I know that's bad. I've been told back pain, bad. Don't lift with your back. I must've lifted with my back. And so I will not move that table again. I will not move that landscaping boulder, or I guess I have to stop gardening cause I can't pick up the bag of mulch. And those are just super limiting, right? You're just it's like stripping away parts of your identity and parts of what you love to do. And then on top of all of that, just on the physiological side, exercise just improves mental health. Mm-hmm. Like it is as effective for anxiety and depression as medication in some cases. And then when you combine those two things, right, the appropriate medication in the appropriate setting with exercise, like we are hardwired to get like mental rewards for being physically active. And so that's a huge thing for people to, they don't even have to know that. They'll just tell you it's the runner's high. I felt good after that workout. Great. I'll see you in 2 days. Let's do it again. They don't need to know why unless they ask.
I love that. I really think another thing that needs to change, and this one's a little easier kind of, I think in order to facilitate exercise being at the forefront and an accomplishable goal, an attainable goal, we have to have better quality of life and balance in the US, especially when it comes to work-life balance. You know, there are people who literally have two or three jobs who truly cannot find the time to exercise. And I try to tell those people, start with 15 to 20 minutes, either when you wake up, before you go to bed, and between your two jobs, literally, if you can just start with something like 15 to 20 minutes, a lot of my patients are like, you know, I really want to try yoga, but I don't have an hour a day to do it. So what? Find a low back flow because you are working through a low back issue right now. Do a 5 to 10 minute yoga flow a few times a week. That's doing
thousands
yoga.
Thousands of them on YouTube.
Literally thousands. And then they're like, wait, what? I can do that? Yeah, you don't have to do yoga for an hour every single day. Would it be great if we all had a free hour to do that? Yeah. But that's just not reality. And it's just amazing. Sometimes all they need is to be exposed to just an easier way to accomplish a goal. And they're like, ah, I'll try that. And I think, again, that's where practitioners come in handy. Having a go-to PT, chiro, a great GP that actually knows this stuff, you know, having someone that's continually reinforcing to you as a patient, like you can do this. So to some of our listeners who might be a general practitioner or a nurse, Where can you recommend that they go to either learn more about strength training and functional medicine or learning how to work better and more cohesively with rehab specialists? What can they do to just become better at this?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I haven't necessarily thought about it from that angle. I mean, I think that, and I should practice more of this based on what I'm going to say, would be like taking the time to learn who's sort of in your physical vicinity, right? If you are a general practitioner, like a PCP, and you know that you get a lot of patients with back pain, which we know you do because it's the second most common reason people come to see you. Like if you can find the time, go find a local physical therapy clinic. Like you probably already refer to a physical therapy clinic, but if you've never been there, like that would be great to just like form a relationship and ask, what do we do for low back pain? Because the best way to sell that to a patient is to like, I've been there. Here are some of the things they're probably going to do with you. And they get it from the doctor, and that would be great. As far as just like learning about the benefits of strength training, Google Scholar, like just there's endless resources out there. Just straight up read a couple articles a month. It doesn't even have to be academic research, right? It could be Apple News. Like just there's so much coming out about the benefits of resistance exercise for essentially every health metric imaginable. And then try it. Do it. Right? If you are a healthcare provider who is not help, like people, there's always backlash for this, but it's like, I will not see a healthcare provider who does not appear healthy.
Yeah.
To me, that's just like a hard stop. Right. And I know that there are innumerable ways to measure health, right? You could be morbidly obese with 10 out of 10 mental health, right? You could be the picture of physical health cover model material and want to kill yourself. Like, I understand that. But I think to me, understanding like the role of nutrition, the role of cardiovascular exercise, the role of resistance exercise, the role of like being properly hydrated and getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, you can sort of start to just see in people whether or not they've kind of checked those boxes. And I'm very big on practicing what you preach. So that doesn't mean that, you know, if you're going to prescribe a medicine, you got to take that medicine, because that would be insane. But I do think that if you're going to promote the benefits of being physically active, you should be able to share your personal story of how being physically active has positively impacted your own life. Like, patients really, really, really appreciate that. I unfortunately have a history of back pain, herniated discs, and I had surgery when I was 25. But I can relate to my patients with low back pain and leg pain and disc pain from their back on a level that I couldn't. I can also relate to patients who I'm trying to promote exercise to all the benefits that I get from exercise. I'm self-aware that I am the outlier in that my favorite place to be is the gym. And I do not expect that of my patients or even of my personal training clients. But I can clearly speak to like how I feel after I work out, even on a day where I didn't want to.
Yeah. Literally.
And so I think once you start learning about it, then the next step is to just do it, practice it. And you will almost have no choice but to tell your patients about it because it's so amazing.
Yeah. To everyone listening, he has given us so many gems. I mean, this not only affects us as people, it affects us as providers. With this knowledge, we're literally able to impact the lives of countless people. And not only, you know, not only improve their musculoskeletal health, as we've discussed, but literally their overall health, whether it be mental, they'll be able to improve their quality of life, improve their relationships with other people, perhaps their work performance. I mean, the list is literally endless for what this can do. So
lifespan.
Yeah, literally. Life,
like, don't forget, like, this can help you live longer in your own home. Like, this is, that's another whole, like, the geriatric side of things is,
yeah.
I heard a quote recently. It was like, you're not too old to train. Like, you're too old not to train. It is more important because you are aging that you do anything and everything to maintain your muscle.
Exactly. It's magic.
That could be a whole other podcast.
Yeah, it literally could. We'll talk about that another time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for this episode. It's been so fun. Please tell our listeners where they can look to get more information from you and learn more about what you have to offer online.
Yeah, I'll just keep it really simple. The best place to connect with me is Instagram. It is at Dr. David Skolnick, DPT. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. My last name is Skolnik. That's sort of the hub for everything. My website is chronically under construction. So I would say just find me on Instagram.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it's been awesome.
Hey, thanks for listening. To learn more, find us on Instagram or Facebook at Better Doctor Project, or check out our website, betterdoctorproject.com. Don't forget to leave us a review and share us with a friend. It helps us reach more healthcare providers who are also striving to make an impact. Thanks again. See you next time.